Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Boy Who Cried Wolf is a renowned children's story and one which comes to mind when listening to U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo blaming Iran for the destabilization in the region. Washington continues to point the finger at Tehran. This time, it is for Yemen's bombing of Saudi oil installations by sending 10 drones to bomb Aramco. Now, the result is that half of the country's oil production is off the market for now until repairs are made. So Ansarallah is effective in their retaliatory actions. And guess what? Iran is blamed. No proof necessary. Just point the finger at the big bad wolf, Tehran.
Drone attacks targeted key oil facilities inside Saudi Arabia on Saturday. Officials have confirmed that the attacks disrupted more than half of Saudi Arabia's oil capacity. That amounts to 5% of the daily global oil supply. Stocks in Saudi Arabia and other Persian Gulf Arab countries also dropped on Sunday following the strikes that hit Saudi state-owned Aramco's oil installations and set them ablaze. Yemen's Ansarullah movement and its allied army forces have claimed responsibility for the pre-dawn attacks.
The air forces launched a large-scale operation involving 10 drones that targeted refineries in Al-Bughaik and Al-Khurais owned by Aramco in eastern Saudi Arabia. This mission comes as part of our legitimate and natural right to react to the crimes of the aggression and its continuous blockade on our country.
However, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo dismissed the Ansarullah narrative. He put the blame on Iran without providing any evidence to support his claim. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has hit back at his American counterpart.
Having failed at Mike's pressure, Secretary Pompeo is turning to Mike's deceit. U.S. and its clients are stuck in Yemen because of illusion that weapon superiority will lead to military victory. Blaming Iran won't end disaster. Accepting our April 2015 proposal to end war and begin talks may.
Zarif was referring to a four-point peace plan for Yemen he submitted to the UN in April 2015. The plan calls for an immediate ceasefire and an end to all foreign military attacks. It also calls for humanitarian assistance, a resumption of broad national dialogue, and the establishment of an inclusive national unity government in Yemen. With support from Washington, Riyadh, since March 2015, has been leading a military coalition fighting Yemen's Ansarullah with the stated goal of quashing the movement and restoring the country's former president, Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi, to power. More than 4 years on, tens of thousands of people have been killed, while millions more are on the brink of famine. The war has also caused what the United Nations describes as the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, but has failed to achieve its goals. Now, the Saturday drone attacks on oil facilities deep inside Saudi Kingdom have turned the spotlight on Yemeni's military capabilities, despite that the country is suffering from years of war and blockade imposed by Riyadh. Experts believe the strikes show that the Yemenis are gaining the upper hand in the face of the Saudi aggression.
It is logical that Yemen will eventually strike back, and it seems that they are now slowly but gradually getting the upper hand.
Others believe that it's a matter of time whether Saudi Arabia will stop its devastating war or will it brace for more confrontation with the Yemeni army.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, David Swanson, director of World Beyond War out of Charlottesville, and Maxine Dover, journalist and political analyst out of New York. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in New York with Maxine. Well, why is it that Pompeo, without any proof, can make such an accusation blaming Iran? Maxine? Okay, it seems like we have lost Maxine. Let me pose that question to you, David. In your perspective, then, why is it that Pompeo can and make this accusation without any proof, and how dangerous is this?
Well, it's customary in the United States to make accusations toward the end of starting wars and in escalating wars and in creating hostilities without any need for proof. And there has never been any repercussion, any consequences, any penalty for promoting wars on the basis of lies. I think, like that boy who cried wolf in that story, once in a while the claims turn out to be true. But when there isn't any proof, one has to remain extremely skeptical. And when the claims are coming from someone who wants a war with the nation he's accusing, you have to be particularly skeptical. But this is a war that the creation of which the United States has been behind for years, and blaming other countries is rather beside the point, regardless of the particular incident.
Well, staying with you, David, this type of accusation, you know, it's actually reminiscent of the lies that was said about Iraq and having weapons of mass destruction without any proof, but led to the U.S. and its allies attacking Iraq. Has Washington learned anything from that experience, or perhaps because it never had to pay for its lies, it hasn't? What do you think?
Some people have, some people have not. The U.S. now has a president in Donald Trump who supported that war at the time but pretends he didn't. The Democratic presidential candidates include Joe Biden, who was the leading supporter of that war in the U.S. Senate and continued to support it and fund it and argue for it for years after, and now pretends he didn't. One of the other Democratic presidential candidates, Tulsi Gabbard, is someone who frequently speaks out against wars and the threat of war and the danger of wars with new countries, including Iran, but who almost can't open her mouth without bragging about having joined in and belatedly joined in the war on Iraq, supposedly having believed all the lies. So there is a long, long way to go. Though, of course, this incident is rather different in that it actually involves the use of weapons rather than just, claims of possession of weapons.
Well, Maxine, hopefully we have established a connection by phone with you. Immediately following the Ansarullah attack on the Saudi oil installation, U.S. President Donald Trump called the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to console him and basically let the regime know that Washington is ready to defend the oil-rich kingdom. Your take on this?
Look, there are shared business interests. Good evening. I'm sorry we're having difficulty with the connection.
Yes, me too.
Technology is not always perfect.
Indeed. Welcome.
The shared business interests make it a very normal approach that Trump would take the attitude of consoling, as you say, but rather of assuring, I would guess, the Saudi regime that there will be an American backing. That's not new. There is Saudi Arabia is an ally of the United States and should be able to count, as any ally should be, able to count on its ally. So the call from Trump to the Saudi prince is not a surprise. It would be expected.
Well, David, your take on that. Of course, Maxine said a call to an ally to show support wouldn't be a surprise, but we're talking about the Saudi regime, who has been responsible for starting this onslaught against the Yemeni people, killing at least 17,000, millions of people now on the edge of starvation. And yet Washington reassures Riyadh that it has its back. What does it mean?
Well, the whole framing is dishonest and misleading. The notion that the United States will step in to defend Saudi Arabia against aggression. I don't think Saudi Arabia started this war. I think the United States started this war. I think President Barack Obama and his drones started this war with a drone war on Yemen, traumatizing the inhabitants of Yemen, blowing up houses, killing men, women, and children. And many of us predicted the escalation to a full-blown war and predicted the proliferation of the drone technology. This was supposed to be cheap and easy war. Now you have Saudi Arabia blowing up school buses and hospitals and prisons and houses, and nobody shouts, there's a dramatic escalation in the war. But as soon as oil is threatened, this is like Baghdad after shock and awe, guarding only the oil ministry and letting everything else burn. As soon as oil is threatened, there's a dramatic escalation in the war. Well, this is the drone technology predictably blowing back against the United States and its allies. This attack, you know, cost less than, you know, the student debt of a single U.S. kid. This is technology that predictably is going to be used against the United States and Israel and other nations that developed and proliferated it.
Well, Maxine, Saudi Aramco has now announced that the damage to its infrastructure is big. How significant is it that Yemen's Ansarullah has been able to knock out half of the Saudis' oil production with their drones, and that the Saudis have been actually forced to admit it?
Well, I think it's quite significant. The admission would be visible, and the facts on the ground are visible to anyone who has access to Google Earth, the satellite technology that's available in the most simple scientific lab. The fact that the structure is so centralized that a single attack can knock out what is seems to be 50% of capacity is a lesson to every industry that centralizes its production in one or two central places. It's a lesson to the world that either we stop going at each other and allow industry to develop in the most efficient way, or if there is going to be war, then to protect itself, a country or a company is going to have to decentralize its operations.
Well, David, what kind of economic impact might this have on the Saudi economy, especially if more attacks are going to take place, which has been promised by the Yemenis, unless the Saudis stop their aggression and onslaught on Yemen?
Well, it will clearly have a significant impact on the Saudi economy, which depends largely on this one export. But I think the lesson is not to decentralize it. The lesson is that centralized or not, the oil will kill us if the wars do not. And while this attack is absolutely inexcusable, anything that restrains the oil production industry is good for the earth. This entire region of the planet is going to be so hot that no human can live in it. So we have to get off the oil just as we have to get off the wars. But we don't do it this way, blowing up oil facilities, which is incredibly damaging to the natural environment, as is all war making.
Well, let me just jump in here, David. So are you saying that what Ansarullah has done was actually not a positive thing? Because if we look at the situation, of course, being under Saudi bombardment for more than four and a half years now, killing so many people, strangling the economy, destroying the infrastructure, and of course, millions on the verge of starvation, one may say that actually Ansarullah has no other choice but to try to fight back in order to survive.
One may say that, and millions of people will say that. I will not be among them, because violent retaliation against greater violence and injustice may be defensible in many people's eyes. It's not usually effective and helpful, and it's likely to result in greater retaliation from the Saudis and the Americans and others. You know, I'm not going to tell the victims of my government what they can and cannot do, but the lessons of the past century show that nonviolent resistance is over twice as likely to succeed as violent resistance. And blowing up oil facilities is not good for any of us or any living thing on the planet. Mm. This is not the way in which we need to shut down the oil industry.
Well, Maxine, is it that the successful attack targeting the Saudis' oil production sector by the Yemenis is too difficult for the Saudis and their American allies to accept? Thus, they want to point the finger at Iran instead of Ansarullah.
Look, the destruction of the Saudi capacity, even though it's 50% of the Saudi capacity, is only about 5% of the global oil supply. Clearly, it's enough to spike oil prices. And as my colleague on the air says, it is time to look at other sources of energy, the carbon destruction of the atmosphere and the overheating of the Middle East is something that we must all be concerned about. This isn't a matter of one oil refinery as widespread as its effect will be. It's a matter of a climate of global warming that's deeply affected. And it's time for the nations of the world to look at alternative energy.
I mean, we're getting off subject about the... Let me just jump in here, Maxine. Maxine, let me just jump in here. I mean, we're getting a little bit off subject. We're talking about climate control. But if we're while we're getting off subject, I mean, it is your president once again that actually has taken your country out of the Paris Agreement. So it seems like no matter what, if we're talking about wars because of oil, we're talking about environmental destruction, I mean, fingers go back to the United States. So the point of it is, I mean, what are other countries to do? David said that resistance in this way is not effective. But of course, we've seen what happened when entities actually sign agreements with the United States. So what is the answer there? What is the answer to control? And it's actually the United States that is backing Saudi Arabia in this onslaught against Yemen.
The onslaught against Yemen must stop. There is no possible 2020 excuse for starving millions of people. There's no possible excuse for that. The change in recognition of the effects of fossil fuel, whether it's shale oil mining in Germany or oil production in Saudi Arabia, must be recognized. And that is a global responsibility and something that every administration had better open its eyes to do and look at the alternate sources. We talk about the region being so hot that it will be unlivable. The other side of the so hot is where's the solar technology application? There are major companies in America that are taking responsibility. I could note Walmart, which is using solar and developing solar in its fuel use, and every responsible corporate company and every responsible government better look 20 or 40 years ahead to the next generation, to our children's children, and recognize that oil and war are not the way to go.
Well, Maxine, I mean, that's great for you to say, sitting in New York, but I'm wondering about our Yemeni counterparts sitting in various parts of that country and being bombed constantly, being able to have the luxury to even worry about that at this point in time. The issue at hand is that this war has been going on for more than 4.5 years, bombing infrastructure, bombing mainly civilians, and actually the rest of the world. Your country, for example, has been silent at best. We will also say actually supporting the Saudi regime. So isn't this the problem at hand, David? It's actually this perspective that actually those in the West have this luxury to think on this level. But the Yemeni people are dying as I speak right now, and their only way is actually self-defense, or no one even cares.
I am sorry for the perspective that no one cares, because there are some people who care. And in the coming days and
weeks, the governments that are going to put the pressure, the governments that actually can stop this war immediately, they don't care. They may care now because of some threat with their global flow of oil. But otherwise, with just Yemeni people dying, do you think that they really show that they care? 4.5 years. 4.5 years this war has been going on, with kids, Yemeni kids, dying every day.
I rather obviously do not think any such horrendous, ridiculous thing. I merely wanted to point out that the people risking prison in the coming weeks in the global climate strike and the effort to shut down Washington, D.C. over these issues are taking some risks, and that we need everyone around the world who is not living in a war zone to think about the people who are living in that area and to take significant risks themselves to put an end to the injustice. And we need the nations, governments, governments of the world to start holding the U.S. government to international standards when it comes to climate, when it comes to war, when it comes to the whole range of crimes committed by the U.S. empire. And the notion that we're going to turn to supposedly responsible corporations like Walmart, for God's sakes, is ridiculous. These are predatory institutions that are destroying the natural environment and the rule of law and living standards within the United States and abroad. We need to take charge of governments, and we need to force those governments to take control of corporations, and we need to put an end to the raping of this planet and the militarism and the rape and the racism and the environmental destruction that are such an inherent part of Western and global society.
And on that note, unfortunately, we're out of time. I appreciate you both being with us, and sorry about the technical difficulty out of New York with Maxine Dover, journalist and political analyst, and thank you, David Swanson, director of World Beyond War out of Charlottesville, for being with us. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate right here at Press TV. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you next time.